dream. So here it goes. Parshas Miketz starts off, as everybody knows, with the two dreams that Paro had. One of them being the seven cows, the seven fat cows coming out from the river, and then the seven skinny cows coming up after them, consuming them, and the seven fat cows are now gone. The second dream was when there were seven stalks, seven weaker stalks, stalks that didn't look, or seven strong stalks that came out first, and then seven weaker stalks came in again, swallowed up the seven strong stalks as if they weren't there. So the pasuk is Vayiba Boker. It was in the morning in pasuk Ches, Vatipa Em Rucho. So the word Vatipa Em really means he was shut, like his heart was fluttering. He was just, his whole spirit, everything was just gone. He didn't know what to say. Vayishach, and he sent Vayikras Kol Chartum in Mitzrayim. He called over all the magicians of Mitzrayim, Kol Chachamim, and all the wise men. Vayisaper Paro lahem es chalomo. Paro told them over his dream. The Ein Poser Osam Lefaro. No one translated it for Paro. Now, notice the word Osam, all of them. Now, at the end of Pasuk Zion, it says, Vayikas Paro, Paro woke up, Vine Chalom. It was one dream, seemingly that everything was all one. But when he woke up in the morning, he told over the Chachamim, it says, V'ein poster osam leparo. They didn't translate them to paro. So we're going to go over a lot of different things over here. Number one, what are chartumim? What does the word chartumim mean? So Rashi says an unbelievable pshat. Chartumim, he says, is hanochrim betime mesim. They snort the bones of the dead. Sheshoalim ba'atzmos. They ask the bones. Timi is atzmos, b'lashon Arami. Now, Aramean, Timi refers to bones, which means that these people put bones, sometimes of dead people, inside their noses. And from that, somehow they were able to talk to the dead and were able to have relationships with people that were already dead just from taking those bones and bringing them up to their nose. That's what the Mizrahi explains it as. The witch doctor with the noses inside, right? That's what it was supposed to be. Or at least that they were able to fake it. If you want to go with the Rambam, then that means they were able to fake it. Unculus, the way Unculus translates Khartoumen, and the way he learns it all, but it's Kol Charoshe Mitzrayim. And Choresh V'Choshev is usually a reference to not only the carpenters, but also magicians. That it really was magic, that they use these magic tricks in order to be able to get down there. The Ibn Ezra says there were people who knew the sources for things. And that's what they knew. They knew the makor of where all this came from, and thus they were perfect at figuring out dreams, because when they saw something in a dream, they were able to say, that refers to this. They were able to find out sources and things like that. The Rabbeinu Amayuchas, which is brought down by the Parish of Meshulash and Rashi, says that they were stargazers. They were able to see things in the future, and they were able to define the dreams based on what they saw in the future. We're going to try to use every single one of these Parishim. What's up, Sal?
So isn't stargazers a different word?
Stargazers normally are chozim bekochadim. Usually that's the word used. Nonetheless, chartumim may have been the word used for them in Mitzrayim. So that's the way that it would refer to over here. Ma'onin, maybe. Menachesh, those types of guys. Oh, you don't need the bones, though. Those are really the bones, yeah. Either way, this is probably the word they used in the Mitzrayim, although that's what it's supposed to be. But the wording is strange. Ein poser osam aparo is not the right wording. Really, I'm not good at dicta. You all know that, but I don't know how to translate. What would I say if I want to say they didn't translate anything or they had nothing for him, right? The wording is not the ein poser osam lafaro. Nobody solved it. It really should be the way it should be. Was I guess you'd say they stop a problem this Kolomo and nothing happened. Nothing was there. Ein poser osam lafaro, the way Rashi is being medayik over here, is poser in hayu osam. They were translating it, but avolola paro. But it wasn't good for paro. In other words, ein poser osam should be, it should have just been the ein poser osam, period. They didn't translate that. The ein poser osam lafaro means paro didn't accept the translation they were giving him. So what were they saying? Shaloya kolan nichnas ba'oznav, their voices weren't heard by his ears, it didn't go into his ears. Voloya koras ruach bepisonam, and he wasn't happy with the way they were translating the dream. Shayu omrim sheva banos atzmolad, they were saying, you are going to give birth to seven daughters, sheva banos atzakover, you're going to bury seven daughters, and that was the translation of the dream. This is an unbelievable Rashi. Well, Rashi is telling us, based on the Medrash, it's a Bereishis Rabbah, but nonetheless, based on a Medrash, they were translating the dream, and we know what the translation was. Why do we need to know that? I mean, if it's so important, you'd think that, I don't know, there would be an explanation that went with them, and here's why seven cows referred to seven daughters. I mean, aside from the fact that you just called cows girls in front of Paro's face. I don't know if I'd be so happy if my girls were called cows in front of somebody else, or why they would think that that would be a reference to my daughters. I think I would be kind of upset if that sort of a thing happened. That's number one. Let's also ignore the fact that they just told the king that his seven daughters were going to die. If you weren't positive about that, why would you say that? That is not a good mistranslation of a dream. That's not the way you want to mistranslate. You want to mistranslate and say you're going to have seven daughters and they're all going to be awesome. And then mistranslate that way to say seven daughters are going to give birth to and the seven daughters are going to die. You don't say that to a king, ever. Especially a king back then who could kill you by just doing anything.
That's what they believe to be the correct interpretation, and why wouldn't they do that? You have a...
You're right. So that's what I'm saying. So it must have been that it was 100% clear to them that that was the translation. Where did they get that from? How in the world were they so positive? And if that was the translation, was it true? In the end, did Paro lose seven daughters? How in the world were they so positive that it happened? That's really what I'm asking. Where did it come from over here? Where was it there? The Mizrahi says, the Pirush on Rashi says, it must have been a Kabbalah by them. They must have just accepted it or knew that this is how you translate cows and sheaves of wheat in a dream. Because otherwise, how in the world would they have come up with that? He says, out of Chokmah, there's no way why those specific things should refer to daughters. Why that would refer to that whatsoever.
I can't say they made it up. They needed to tell something that sounds somewhat logical. So, you know, it's meant to be explained, you know, to Paro what it means. So this is what they came up with. And then they would tell him, like, okay, pray to the gods and maybe this won't happen.
See, it would be interesting if they would have said, and therefore you should pray. They didn't say that. It was Yosef who told them, and therefore we have to do something about the dream. But that's an interesting call. It would be good if they said that there was a lesson behind it. It's just interesting. It's an interesting call, and it's not something I would do in front of a king. That definitely not. Bruce. Yeah. So that's a bit of a question also. It seems from the wording of the Rishonim, it seems that they heard it, but not anybody else, which makes sense, as the Book of Mormon was made also, right? So one guy heard it, and they understood it from there. Shaul Melech is 100% correct. That only one person, yeah, 100%, only one person heard it. Just did that yesterday, last night, in my Navi Shir. That's 100%. So let's add on a little bit more. The Kli Yakar asks another question on Rashi, which is an even more powerful question. Rashi's quoting a Medrash. He's leaving out the second part of the Medrash. See, there were two parts to this Medrash. There were two dreams, according to Khartoumen. One dream was that you're going to have seven daughters, and you're going to lose seven daughters. The other part of the dream is you're going to have seven aparchios. Seven cities are going to be conquered, and seven cities are going to rebel against you. That was the second translation that they gave for the dreams. So there were two things that we were mentioning by these dreams. There were two things that were going on, not just one. So why does Rashi leave out the aparchios and only translate the one about the daughters themselves? So the Kli Yakar gives two answers. To explain Rashi, he says that translating it to girls can make it all one dream. The Gemara tells us that there are two things that a person must get married for, and two things that happen to you if you get married for that reason. The two things are, number one, you will be able to be zocha to have children. Obviously, there will be puru ravu by being together with a wife, right? That's number one. Number two, she saves her husband from doing wrong things. Meaning, she's able to protect him from being around other people by, so to speak, satisfying his needs so that he doesn't find something elsewhere. So there's two aspects. Number one, the mitzvah aspect of puru ravu, and number two, the aspect of saving them from sin. And those are the two reasons why a person must get married, and that's the idea behind it. Now he says that when it comes to the second part of saving the husband, they satisfy them. It's the concept of bread. The same way bread satisfies hunger, so too those wives satisfy their husbands. Which makes sense now. The paros, which are the cows, are represented by pru revu, meaning paros, which is the word in Hebrew for cow, is paru v'ravu. The word paru, in which they become fruitful and multiply, is the representation of the kids that will be coming from this wife. And the second thing that's good is the satisfaction. That's the grain / the bread that was made from that grain, in which that also represented the daughters. So Rashi says that both the dreams represented the daughters. Both of the dreams were referring to daughters, and the aparchios was not part of these dreams. It was something else entirely. And that's how Rashi understood the entire area. But he, on the other hand, the Kliyakar says, if not for Rashi, I would have said that both translations work out well. Because a cow, we all know, is a goring creature, taking down nations with their horns. So the cows would really be referring to the eparchios taking down the other cities, while the grain would represent the wives, which would keep them from sinning, so that would be the daughters. So the two dreams are represented over here. But then the Kliyakar says the Chiddush at the very end of this piece, and he says, when Yosef is talking to Paro, Paro says to Yosef, Chalom chalamti uposter eino so. So I dreamt a dream, and there is no translation for it. Bani shamati elecho tishma chalom litoro so. Says the Kliyakar, what he was trying to say is that again, ein poster eino so, is that no translator would tell me what they saw. This is unbelievable, said the Kliyakar. The translators knew what the dream meant, or in their minds, they knew what it meant. Seven daughters are going to give birth to, seven daughters are going to die. Seven eparchios are going to be captured, seven eparchios are going to be rebelling against you. But they wouldn't tell it to Paro. They wouldn't tell it to Paro. Look at the wording again in the pasuk. The ein poster osam the Paro. They refused. They said, we're not going to tell it to you, Paro, because it's a terrible thing. So we don't want to say it out loud. We don't want to say anything about it. If we say it out loud, then you're going to hear it and you're going to kill us. So they refused to tell him. So Paro was sitting there and saying, is there no one who's willing to tell me the translation of this dream? So he went to the Chachamim. When the wise men heard it, they thought the exact same thing. They said, we can't tell it to you. Yosef was the only person who was willing to say something to Paro. He is the one who said it's going to be 7 years of Rav. They'll be able to tell him, and that's that. Which is an unbelievable answer over here as to what was going on. For the question on Rashi though, on what happened with Rashi and how it worked, why does he say differently from the Medrash? The Torah Shlema gives an answer. He says, only some of them were saying that he would lose daughters. The others were saying that he was going to lose cities. They were arguing with one another. Some of the cartoonmen were saying it refers to daughters. Some of the cartoonmen were saying it refers to cities. But those opinions were up against each other. It wasn't that half of them were saying daughters and half of them were saying cities. It wasn't like that. It was that, I'm sorry, that all of them were saying that the first dream was daughters and the second dream was cities. It's not like that. They thought it was one dream, all referring to daughters or all referring to cities, and that's what they thought. They didn't agree with one another. That's the idea behind it. But why does this help us? What's the purpose of these dreams? So I'm going to tell you three pshatim. The Gur Aryeh, which is the Maharal, is the most obvious and probably the one that everybody has already thought of. The Ve'erba Soda is a pshat that no one has ever thought of in their lives. Even if I gave you a billion years, and I give you, it would be like 100, you know, a million monkeys typing on a million typewriters, you would come out with the word letter A about a billion times. That's about it. There's no way anybody would come up with what the Ve'erba Soda says. And then the Yalka Ruveni, which is Soda Zatoru, will get the outside Devarim, but we're not going to be able to fully understand what he's trying to say. The Gur Aryeh says, the reason why we need to know the translation to these dreams is that it's unbelievable. To show us why he didn't like it. To show us why he didn't like it. He heard their translation, he said, that's garbage. I mean, Ein Poster was on the Paro. Paro heard their translation and said, I just don't like it. I don't think you guys are telling me anything. You're telling me that I'm going to have seven daughters, I'm going to lose them. There are other people who have daughters and have lost their daughters. Why don't they get dreams like this? If it's dealing with me and it's a private dream that has to deal with my matters and everything that I'm dealing with, then why am I the one who's being told this? And why is it bothering me so much? Other people have had this. There's got to be something more to this dream, says the Gur Aryeh. And here's the shot. Yosef at Tzadik told them a Chiddush. There's going to be a famine. Now that's something that they didn't expect. That's something they didn't hear when he heard that translation. They said, oh, that's a really good idea. But here, says the Gur Aryeh, the fact that it said seven daughters, lav davka, says the Gur Aryeh. Lav davka. It doesn't really mean they translated it as seven daughters. It was something like that. It was something like along the lines of, you're going to have seven of something and then lose them afterward. Either daughters, or cities, or chairs. It could have been anything. Rashi chose the part of the Medrash that's dealing with it, but the Medrash was just trying to say that they were guessing what it could be. Maybe it's seven daughters, maybe it's seven cities, maybe it's seven whatever. And the point was that the Chartumim were not sure themselves of what the translation of the dream was. They were sitting there and saying, I don't know, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. I'm not even so positive myself. They weren't sure. And when they weren't sure and they were trying to translate what they thought the dream meant, they said, well, we don't know. So that Paro said, no. I don't want a maybe this, maybe that. I want a sure thing. But it wasn't really daughters and it wasn't really cities. That was not the translation that they said. That's just as if to say there were seven daughters that ended up dying, and as if to say there were seven cities. That answers all of our questions. The questions of how could he have gone up and said that the daughters were dying. They didn't really say that. They said something different. We don't know what it is, but it's something like this. Something like this, and that's the answer behind the entire thing. That's the Gur Aryeh, and it's an easy answer. I mean, if you say Lav Davka, that usually works for anything. Yeah, it's not really that. Then you got the answer. That's an easy way of getting around it. The Be'er Bavseta comes up with another idea. He says the whole dream that Paro had was a hint to Bnei Yisrael coming down to Egypt and eventually leaving. And he goes like this. He says the following. Paro is standing on the river. The river represents the bris bena basarim between Avram Avinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, the flow of life. He says, the flow of life. Paro was going to be in charge of the Jews when they were in Golos. When the Jews were going through the flow of life, and unfortunately it had to be that they went through Golos for 210 years, Paro was standing on the oar. He was the one that was going to be in charge, and he would enslave them in this Golos that they were going to have. From the river came up seven cows that were Yefos Maro Brios Basar. Says the Be'er Bavseta, seven is a representation of the 70 Jews that went down to Egypt originally, that you can knock down the 70 into seven. And he says there were Yefos Maro Brios Basar, two parts. He says one represents their physicality, their gashmias, that they were healthy, big individuals. The Shvatim were very strong guys. Not only that, they were Brios Basar is not a reference to the physicality, but rather to their ruchnias, that they were holy, spiritual people. Batzarena Bachu, when they first came down to Mitzrayim, they grazed together with the Egyptians, meaning they did business with one another, they dealt with one another, and everything was all good for one another, and that's that. V'inei, Sheva Paro Zacheru Zolzachorim Niyor. There were seven other cows that came up in the river that were bad looking and very thin. That represents the seven sons of Mitzrayim. If we go back to Parshas Noach, at the very end it says the Mitzrayim had seven sons. The Plishtim, the Kasluchim, all the Ludim, the Aaron, I forgot what all the names are. Anumim, there were seven of them. There you go, you have them. Patsrusim, right, the Patsrusim. Seven nations altogether, which were the sons of Mitzrayim. That's a reference to them, that they were, number one, not very good looking, and number two, that they were considered very unspiritual, that they did not have that spirituality the way they had. And they stood by the cows on the banks of the river because of the ghosts that the Jews had to have. They stood by them, enslaving them and making sure they did whatever they wanted them to do. And that's what happened at that point. And then the Egyptians swallowed them up. They enslaved them. They made them into nothing. They made them as if the Jews weren't there anymore. And that happened in both ways. Physically, the Jews became very, very weak. That's number one. And spiritually, they lost their spiritual prowess, to which they went down to what we know of as the 49th level of Tumah, and many Jews joined the Egyptian nation. And many Jews were part of the Egyptian nation, and part of who they were. That's what ended up happening, Vayikatz Paro. And then Paro woke up. That was also part of the dream. That Paro waking up was not him really waking up. He really saw himself in the dream as if he was waking up, where he saw, I'm the one in charge. I'm the guy in charge of everything. I'm the one who's ruling everything, thinking that he was so powerful. Vayishan. But then things started to get bad. And this now is a reference to what was going to happen at the end. At that moment, the Jews, also represented by 70, seven stalks of wheat, they came up, in one kone, brios vitovos. Now, if I remember correctly, this is not yet referring to the Jews. Yeah, this is not referring to the Jews. Now, this refers to the seven nations of Canaan, whose money came down to Mitzrayim. And the Mitzrayim had taken all of that money during the Rav, during the hunger, in which all of the money was sitting there and all the money was owned by them. Why seven? Because there were seven nations that were living in Eretz Canaan. And then, Shevi Shibolim Dakus Ushtufos Kadim. This now represents the Jews. The Jews were now seven sheaves of wheat, but they were very thin physically. Ushtufos Kadim, blown away by the eastern wind, means again that they did not have spiritually, they had nothing left. They weren't really there. Somkos Akhorein, they started to sprout when they left Mitzrayim. And they swallowed up, this is the thin sheaves of wheat, meaning the Bnei Yisrael that left Mitzrayim. They swallowed up the big ones. They took over all of Eretz Canaan. And eventually they ruled all over Eretz Canaan. And then Paro woke up and realized there was all one dream. That's how the Be'er Basada translates it. He says it was all a prophecy. And everything was referring to Bnei Yisrael, and that's what it refers to over here. Nothing to do with anything else. Crazy pshat, right? In a million years, nobody would have gotten that. I mean, why would you imagine that? But that's what the Khartoumim were seeing. They were seeing seven daughters referring to Bnei Yisrael, and then he's seeing them dying, meaning he saw Bnei Yisrael go down. Then he saw the seven Aparchios, which refers to the seven lands of Eretz Canaan, the seven nations of Eretz Canaan, that were taken over by Egypt, and then rebelling, they saw the Jews taking over those lands. That's what it was referring to over here. So every part of the dream was a reference to something that was going to happen in the future, and that's what they were seeing. They just didn't know what they saw. They saw it, but they didn't fully understand it. That was the idea behind it. Amazing, isn't it? That's the Be'er Basada. That's unbelievable.
How were the seven cows fat cows of the Jews?
I don't know. It doesn't say exactly why, but I don't know. And then why the seven fat cows originally referred to Bnei Yisrael at the time that were spiritually and physically strong. That's the idea that he gives it. And then later on, they became the stalks of wheat that were weak and blown away by the east wind. That's what it refers to. But I don't know why it refers to that specifically, and the Be'er Basada does not explain that. But the Al-Gurvini has a crazy shot, absolute crazy shot. He says it's all a hint toward the fact that the Jews will eventually rule over Paro and the Egyptians, but not at this time, and not referring to Gaulus. Paro at the time was the king of evil, which meant that his right-hand man was the Sultan. The Sultan worked together with Paro, and they worked together on the same idea. The Sultan knows the power of great men, and knew that if the Jews have these great men, then it's his end. He would die, and he would be gone. So what did he do? He convinced HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, because obviously we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed it to be, that the Sultan was allowed to be Meshadich, to make a Shidduch, between seven great men of the Jews and seven people of his own side. Someone from his side, from the side of Tumah. Now what does that mean? It means they came from families that were not miyuchas, connected with the Avos, and that they didn't have any connection with anybody holy, and yet still they would be able to marry the great men of Klal Yisrael. That's what the Sultan wanted to do. Beis and Shamayla allowed it. It was almost like a test to those great people. Would they grow and become greater even though they had wives that were not on their level? Or would they go down because of it? But here was the clincher. Gavriel HaMalach got involved. And when Gavriel HaMalach got involved, he made sure that the seven people that were given over from the southern side were good people on the inside. Even if they weren't ready for it yet, he made them the people that were, so to speak, good enough for them that they were able to grow and become great people. And he gives the example. Here we go. It says, Yehuda, Yosef, Moshe, Elazar HaKohen, Yehoshua, Shimshon, and David HaMelech. All seven of them married either a Gioris or a Bas Gerim. Let's go through every single one of them. Yehuda married Tamar. Tamar was from Shem, maybe a grandson, a granddaughter of Shem, but he married Tamar, which obviously was somebody that was from the other side, so to speak, not from Klal Yisrael. And if you ask me, but there was no Klal Yisrael, who else is he supposed to marry? I mean, how is that possible? That's what Gabriel did, meaning Gabriel made sure that if he was going to marry somebody, because Yehuda is the progenitor of Mashiach, it was going to be somebody who is the best of the rest. That's what Gabriel took care of. But the Sultan made sure it would be from his side, a side of Tumah. And we saw what happened, Yehuda and Tamar. Although it looked horrible at first, we know that it worked out well at the end. Number two is Yosef with Othnas. Othnas may have been the daughter of Paro, of Potiphar, may have been the actual daughter of Potiphar, but the Midrashim tell us that really she came from Dinah and Shechem, which even shows it's from Shechem. It's got to be a terrible match. But look what Yosef was able to come out with Othnas. Ephraim and Manasseh were able to come from that relationship, so obviously it worked out well. Moshe Rabbeinu, we all know.
To trick the Satan, because the Satan he's a goy, so it goes through the father's lineage. But,
no, very, very good. But, it goes through the father, but really it goes through the mother. Very, very good. I like that a lot. And Lazar HaKohen, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm sorry, we all know, married Tzipora. Tzipora came from the greatest Ovid Avodah Zarah of all time. Yisro was all around everywhere. And that also connects with the Lazar HaKohen. And Lazar HaKohen, who gave birth to Pinchas, was also married to one of Tzipora's sisters. As a side note, I have no idea when Lazar HaKohen could have married one of Yisro's sisters. Pinchas was old already by the time the Mishkan was built. He was not a young kid. The Chassam Sofer says he was 13 at the time of when the Mishkan was created. 13 years old. That means he was born 13 years earlier in Mitzrayim. And his mother was Yisro's daughter. How in the world did Elazar, the son of Aaron HaKohen, have Yisro's daughter as a wife?
Maybe it was his niece.
Or what?
Maybe it was her niece or some daughter's daughter or something.
No, it says straight out that, remember, it's a Rashi that Pinchas is known as Bas Poti, right? And Rashi says the daughter of Yisro, who was Mefate Magolim to Avodah Zarah. That's who Pinchas was.
I'm
sorry.
Yisro is the woman's shrine.
Yeah, it's still strange that means that he married Elazar, the Kohen, married Yisro, the chief advisor of Paro's daughter. That doesn't strike you as strange? And you think, nonetheless, it still strikes me as strange. And also, you'd think that Tzipora was the first daughter of Yisro to marry a Jew, not Elazar's wife. It's just a side note that, like,
got married before Moshe?
Yeah, 13 years. No, yeah, before Moshe got married. 13 years before Moshe came back, Pinchas was born. He was 13 when the Mishkan was created.
Well, we don't know how old Moshe's oldest son was.
Gershom and Eliezer? No, we know.
Well, we know what's
either way, you're getting a hole in here somewhere. When did Elazar marry Yisro's daughter? When did that happen? Did Yisro go back to Mitzrayim and bring his daughter there and say, hey, I want to marry a Jew who's being oppressed? Where did that happen? It's just stump. It's a stump side note that I have not seen asked anywhere, and I can't understand why not. What?
He was a lady. They weren't being slaves.
So even if he wasn't being slaved, would Yisro want to be Mashanech his daughter with such a person? Well, where did it come from?
Hagar was Pharaoh's daughter.
Yeah, but not when they were enslaved. But not when they were enslaved. Meaning not when the Jews were enslaved. Yeah, all the way back in the day. It's just, you can answer it. I'd like to see it somewhere. I'd like someone to say, yeah, it's obvious because of this. And I say, like, oh, that makes sense now. That's what I really want to hear. That's what I really want. The next one was Yoshua. We all know who Yoshua married. Rachav HaZona. Which is also strange. A Zona. But at the end of her life, she was Megayer. She was Megareth. We all know that she allowed Kalev and Pinchas to be able to survive when they were the ones spying out in the city of Jericho. Rachav HaZona became the wife of Yoshua. Now, although they did not have any sons, the Gemara tells us that Rachav had children that were all Nevi'im. So even though he only had daughters, but the daughters eventually gave birth to Nevi'im, so that also became a great relationship. Then comes one that unfortunately did not work out the way we wanted it to. Shimshon, who married the daughters of Plishtim. That did not work out the way it was supposed to. Somehow, there was a mess up there. We don't know exactly what it was, but the Leela messed up Shimshon, and somehow that the Sultan was successful in. Because there were no children of Shimshon that we know of that ended up being successful. And finally, David HaMelech. David HaMelech was together with the Afas Toar. Possibly, it might be Bathsheba, but it seems unlikely. We don't know exactly which person, but possibly it's the Afas Toar that he was with, in which he had the children of Avshalom, who could have been the king, but eventually rebelled against David HaMelech, as well as Tamar, not the same Tamar as before, but his daughter Tamar, who was taken by Amnon, his other son. It's a whole long maysa, but regardless, it's that. This is what the dream referred to. The seven fat cows of evil were eaten by the seven skinny cows, referring to the Gedolim. And that's what it refers to over here. This was done by Gabriel, who helped them out and made sure that it was happening in the right way, so that the bad yichus would not affect them. The Lo Noda Shabo'al Karbana. They didn't know what had happened, and they didn't realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was highly involved. And that's what it refers to over here. It's a tremendous pshat to the Yalkut Ruveni. Just a bit of a shocker. Something you don't expect when you see something like that. Where does it come from? But he says it's all a reference to what the Sultan does, in which Paro sitting there and worrying says to Khartoum, don't worry about it. As a side note, because it's Hanukkah, you might as well say over the idea. You know what Paro was really worried about, right? What Paro was really worried about more than anything else in the world, he had never ever thought that the weak could conquer the strong. He was the most powerful nation in the world. And when he saw that the weak was conquering the strong, he immediately was worried. How is this possible that the weak is conquering the strong inside my dream? And that he couldn't understand. And that's a reference to Hanukkah. That's why Miketz always comes on a Hanukkah. The seven skinny cows eating the seven fat cows and the seven skinny wheat stalks eating the seven big stalks is entirely a reference to us, the Jews, being able to defeat. And he couldn't understand it. How could that possibly be? And that was the line. Yeah.
The seven ears of corn are like the menorah, and the same word for stem is the same as...
Kaneh. Yeah, very, very good. For the menorah itself in the Beis HaMikdash, that's also a great reference. It's good that we have the seven over here. Very, very good. Now, normally dreams go after the first translation that you hear. Koach Olamos Holkos Achar HaPed. The Gemara Brachos Nun Hei Amadeis. They go after whatever you translate them as. But clearly here, that didn't happen. The dream translators told him something and he didn't accept it. So why doesn't it go after the way that they're translated? I mean, the Gemara, why doesn't it work that way?
Maybe they didn't tell him like that.
So we have like six answers. It could be that they didn't tell him. I didn't even write down that answer. The Chizkuni and the Or HaChaim says because they kept translating as two different dreams, right? But really it was one dream, so therefore we would not accept it. That's that. The Moshe of Zakein and the Rabbeinu Ephraim said that only works if the dreamer accepts what they're telling him. If he refuses to accept it, then it doesn't work. That's the idea behind it. The Malbim says they kept giving him a translation that was private to, for him, for Paro, but he wanted one that was going to be more global because he didn't think that this dream was dealing with himself. The Maskil Ledavid and the Yiriyo Shlomo says that they weren't telling him to do anything. They were just telling him information. He didn't feel that that was the translation of the dream. The Rabbeinu Bachya says that Paro saw the translation along with his dream. He just forgot the translation. So he was sitting there waiting for someone to jog his memory. And Yosef jogged his memory. They didn't, so he knew that couldn't be the answer. And the Chidah says, since someone came afterward and rejected the translation of the Chartumen, therefore, their translation was knocked out completely. So meaning, it only goes after the Peh if no one rejects the translation. But if someone else comes along and says, that's not what it means. It means this instead, which is what Yosef did. Then it doesn't go after that, and that's the idea behind it. Okay, we're left with one last question. We're going to answer it in three different ways, and that's what we're going to go with. How are these wise men and necromancers who specialize in this type of wisdom in order to translate dreams? This was their specialty. How were they unable to translate this dream? I mean, listen, I'm not a genius, and maybe I wouldn't have thought of this, you know, if I hadn't gone through this, but if I was living at a time where the two main food staples were grain and cow meat, because they didn't eat sheep or goats, remember? They treated those as gods. So your two main staples were meat from cows and grain from the ground. How would you not understand what this dream is referring to? How do you not think it's referring to a famine? Well, all of a sudden, Yosef HaTzadik comes along and says, it's a famine. They're like, oh, we should have seen that coming. This is your job. You do this for a living. Where did they mess up so badly that they wouldn't think this way? So says Rabbi Nobachia, the easy answer, Hashem didn't let them understand it. They could have understood it, but Hashem wouldn't let them so that Yosef would come along and say the dream correctly. Really, it's not even the Rabbi Nobachia. The Medrash HaGadda says it. The Yonas Menuzil says it. They all say that answer. It was all for Yosef to become the king, and that's the obvious, because otherwise, how could he mess up that badly? The party Yosef brings another answer, that they assumed that such a dream should only be given to a prophet, and Paro was no prophet. So why was he being told this dream? It must be that there's something behind this dream, and it's something to do with Paro. Because if it was something that was global, why would Paro be getting this dream? But they were wrong. A king can always have a dream that's global for the entire nation. And that's what Yosef told them. This dream is being told to you, Paro, because you have the power to circumvent the whole issue. That's the idea behind it, and that's what was there. But the Maral Diskin, and this is what it is, and we've mentioned this before, from the parish of Meshulish, who brought down a sefer on the Yuchas, that the Chartumen were dream translators. They were guys who were able to look up in the sky, stargaze in the sky, look what was going on in the future by seeing what they saw in the stars, and then being able to bring it down and translate the dreams according to what they saw. So here was the problem. They did exactly what they normally did. Says the Maral Diskin, they looked up in the stars and they saw there wasn't going to be a real famine. There would be no famine. There would be no years of satiety. There wasn't going to be this stuff. So when they looked up at the stars and they didn't see it, they went down to Paro and they said, listen, it can't be that. It can't be famine. It can't be satiation. So it must be that it's referring to something else, less global and more about you. And it's got to be seven daughters. They thought that it was strange, but they said, that should be the translation. It shouldn't be there. So here's the pshat. Yosef HaTzadik got up and translated the dreams and said it was a famine and said it was satiation, right? So they got up and they started laughing at Yosef. They said, you fool. You don't think we knew that as well? Of course we knew that. But we looked up at the stars and we saw that it wasn't true. So it can't be. It's not about that. But they forgot the Back to the Future paradox. If they only would have seen the trilogy of Back to the Future back in the 80s, they would have understood it completely. I think the trilogy actually finished in the 90s. But nonetheless, they would have understood it completely. Says Yosef HaTzadik, the only reason why it doesn't show you up there is because we're going to circumvent it. He's being told this so that during the years of satiation, you won't overeat because I'll be saving all the food. You've got to have a guy in charge who's saving everything. Therefore, there won't be satiation. You'll have just enough, as much as you need. Then, during the years of famine, it won't be a famine. Why won't it be a famine? Because you'll have what you need, because we saved everything during the previous 7 years. That's why you're not seeing it up there in Shemayim, because it's not going to happen. We're going to get around it. That got the cartoon to shut up. That they looked at him and they're just like, you got me. You got me. You were 100% able to figure it out. You had exactly that. And that's the line of Yosef. Who was Avor? Asher Dibarti El Paro. That's exactly what I was saying to Paro, was the line from Yosef. That is exactly what I'm trying to say. And that's the reason why you're being given this dream, to get around the problem. At the end with the Koalos Moshe, this dream was given on Rosh Hashanah. We learned that from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, where it says Yosef exited jail on Rosh Hashanah, one of the 6 things that happened on that day to the Avos. But on Rosh Hashanah itself, Yosef was able to exit the jail. That means that the dream was had on Rosh Hashanah night. Rosh Hashanah night. The dream translators looked at it and said, wait, we get judged for grain on Pesach, according to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah says you get judged for grain on Pesach, not on Rosh Hashanah. So why would that be on Rosh Hashanah and not on Pesach? I know.
The necromancer.
How were they able to know that? Yeah, maybe they knew the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. I don't know. I love Rosh Hashanah. Maybe they did it also. Maybe they did that. I would assume that it means that at certain times they knew there were certain things in the air and that up there in Shemayim and they understood it. But it says the Koalos Moshe, they looked up and they said, what's going on here? How could this be? Why would he get on Rosh Hashanah? It says Yosef, you're missing the point of the dream. The point of the dream is not to tell you there's going to be a famine or that there's going to be satiation. That's not the point of the dream. The point of the dream is to tell you to hire someone to take care of it. And an individual being raised up from a lowly position to a high position is something that's defined on Rosh Hashanah. That's why it's being told on Rosh Hashanah and not on Pesach. Because the point of the dream is not about the famine, it's not about the satiation, it's about me. That I'm being raised up, and that's why it was had on Rosh Hashanah night. So now, let's go through very quickly what we said. We said a bunch of different pshatim as to what it means in Rashi when he said that there were seven daughters altogether. We had the Kli Yukar, we had the Torah Shleimah, and the Gur Aryeh, the Maharal, that says that it was a lav dafka answer all the way through. We then understood what this dream was trying to really say. The Be'er Basodi gave us an answer, the Yalkut Reuveni gave us an answer, and then we said, well, why didn't anybody listen? We gave 6 answers to that question. Why the dream didn't go after that first translation? And then we said, how were they not able to understand the dream? How did they not get it? There's Rabbeinu Bakya, that they were purposely not told, the party's Yosef, that they thought that this wouldn't be had by a person like Paro, that he wasn't a Navi, and the Maral Diskin, which says that they checked the stars and they thought it didn't happen, and Yosef said, that's exactly what this dream is. Okay, we're going to stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbat.